Rogers is the current coordinator of professional learning for KUSD, and Chris Keckler is the chief information officer for Kenosha School District. You may listen again on WGTD.org. It's archived on the Education Matters page, or you can find us on WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. Thank you all so much. I've learned a lot, and I hope that you enjoyed sharing with us.
This program previously aired on June 6th, 2020.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page. Support comes from Kenosha Harbor Market, featuring Geneva Lakes produce, this week offering just harvested beans, squash, carrots, peppers, greens, herbs, tomatoes, eggplant, melons, potatoes, and corn. The market is open Saturdays from 9 until 2 on 2nd Avenue and now on Plaza Du Way. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist with the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside, and Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters. 1 week ago, at this time, a high school organized group, Kenosha Activism, gathered to march from the Kenosha Municipal Building to the Columbus Sculpture, Fountain, and Italian Immigrant Memorial Plaza in Harbor Park. They called their action a Justice for Indigenous Peoples protest. They asked for removal of the Columbus sculpture and more accurate education in the schools about Columbus. When they reached the monument, they were greeted by a loose phalanx of members of the Knights of Columbus, civic officials, and citizens who interposed themselves between the sculpture and the protesters. This morning, we'll hear from the protesters, the local Italian-American community, and gain insights from professors at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, all in pre-recorded interviews. To begin, with me is an adult mentor and spokesperson for the group, Whitney Cabal. Now, Whitney, could you tell us a little bit about this group of students and how they came together?
Yeah, so I believe that several of them started because they were friends with each other. They went to school together. They appear to be from ages 16 or 17 and younger. And I have reason to believe that some of them are not always, they're not actually in high school yet. So Kenosha Activists has held a couple of demonstrations. And what I've seen from their work is that they're a very strong group of individuals. So they work very well together. They have a very strong and powerful team mindset. Nobody makes a decision without the input from the group as a whole. And they work as best as possible when planning and presenting themselves to try and demonstrate that they're on a peaceful mission, and that they're trying to look at things in a positive light. So even when there was pushback at various points of the planning process, they were very clear in engagements and interactions to maintain a level of respect, not just for themselves, but for the community that they were interacting with.
How did it go when the demonstrators reached Harbor Park? There are lots of pictures in the newspaper and the Kenosha News about it and some very good articles. Could you describe in your own words what the scene was like there in Harbor Park when the students and other supporters reached the Columbus statue?
It was terrible, Len. You know, the statue was already lined, and I was trying to position myself on the steps so that I could speak. And I worked really hard on my speech to pay respects to the Italian-American community. But the animosity that was taking place both behind me and next to me, it was very difficult to cope with. There were just a lot of tensions, a lot of emotions running. There had been threats of severe bodily harm on the other side of the counter-protest that was staged. So it was not good. It was not good to arrive there and to try and speak.
What is the outcome that the students are hoping for?
The students want the statue removed. So I proposed a plan that says it's very different from all of the other plans that have been posed to the community. Okay, the plan says, let's move the statue. We don't want to destroy it. Michael Martino worked extremely hard on it. The community worked to raise, not adjusted for inflation and not with the assistance of tax dollars, over $100,000 20 years ago to have the statue built. And, you know, we understand the relationship that the Italian American community has to this statue, not just because of who Christopher Columbus was, but for what he did for Italian American immigrants, and then also what erecting this statue means for the community of Italian Americans. And so the proposition, which was ran past Kenosha activists, is to move the statue. Let's move it to Parkside, Carthage, Gateway, or a museum here in town. Let's work to engage our community and our students and our youth to draft the full history of Christopher Columbus on both sides. What he meant for, what he stands for in relation to Columbus Day, what the statue means for this community, how it came to be, and also the problematic history of Christopher Columbus. And then once we do that, I do have an artist that I have spoken to that is willing to work with the community to erect a different statue to take the place of Christopher Columbus. But, you know, unfortunately, he's not willing to come out until he sees some kind of headway or some kind of willingness to communicate. The reality is that of all the things I spoke about and all, you know, what I was trying to accomplish, I was already in a sense defeated and shut out before any of us arrived to the statue. There was so much anger and animosity from the individuals protecting the statue that I don't think anyone actually heard me. And I understand, I fully understand. It's a very emotional thing to discuss. It's a place where I feel the Italian American community feels threatened, especially in the face of the actions that took place in Chicago, as far as, you know, the mayor had to come in and temporarily remove the statue to protect the community. So I understand the real fear that took place on Saturday. And so right now I'm just working with the activists to try and figure out how, and the community, the connections that I'm making, how to open dialogue, how to empathize with the Italian American immigrants, with the Italian American community as it stands today, and with the work that was put into this statue.
I'm chatting with Gabe Noodle, a county board of the County of Kenosha supervisor. Gabe, good morning.
Good morning.
Now, you're a member of the Italian American community, as I am. I'm like third generation. You and I both contributed money for the sculpture of Columbus and the fountain and the plaza around it. And we had inscribed on those pillars, those plinths, tablets with the names of most of us, of not ourselves so much, but of our parents and grandparents, in my case, who came over from Italy. Reminisce with me about what you remember about the feeling in the community and why that was put up to begin with.
Well, what I can remember, I know we'll go a little bit way back, but it was a great feeling, actually, because it was something to bring up the heritage of Italians, Italian Americans. Many of us were, I believe you say you're a third generation Italians, I'm first generation. I came right from Italy. And it was great to just to do something to show our heritage and our to the community. We're proud to be Kenosha citizen, to contribute to the economy and everything else that is going in Kenosha. A lot of business people, which they provided jobs for, especially even some of the restaurants were the first jobs they would offer to the Italians when they came from Italy. So, and it was something to be proud of, just to show the heritage of Italy.
That's, you know, that's my recollection too. It was more about honoring our heritage and contribution to the culture and economy of Kenosha
Christopher Columbus was the last thing on my mind. And I even discussed with some of the committee members that I wasn't sure that Christopher Columbus was even the right focus, but that's what we turned out doing. Do you have any particular feelings in terms of people you talk to, or maybe your own feelings? What do you hear people saying about whether the sculpture should be of Columbus there, or should it be something else?
Well, I believe right now, and I don't know if it's completely directed against Columbus or the Italian community or anybody else. It seems like right now, if they don't like something or they want to change it, they just start like protest and that they want to do it. And they come up with all kind of excuses or reasons, whichever you want to put it. Now they're saying that Christopher Columbus was not even Italian. Well, he was born in Genoa, so we all know that. I mean, that's a proven fact. And again, what we want to show there, it's the history. You're not going to cancel history. Whether I'm not saying that he was not a good person or whatever, but if they want to say, well, it's debatable whether what kind of person he was, well, that's different. That's history. That's Italian history. That's something that we should have it, and that's not going to change. So we should honor every history, basically, not just Italian, even though probably it comes closer to home when we're talking about the Italian heritage.
Well, you know, they're saying that he was a bad person in terms of the things he brought to the indigenous people, and disease and enslavement and so forth. Should we rethink it? I mean, I'm wondering myself as a donor to the thing.
No, I don't believe so, because again, we're talking about what was going on 500 or more years ago. And that's what it was at that time. At least there is the one, you know, what happened. I'm not saying if that's true, what they're saying that happened. Well, that was, years ago, there was other things that we did not agree on. But we got to live with it again because of the history. We got to show, well, even if it's true, okay? Even if it's true, actually, we should be proud and say, okay, is this what it was? But we worked very hard to come up to where we are now, you know. I came when I was, 16, 17. I just turned 17, you know? And it seemed like people were telling me, older Italian people, they were telling me that I believe in the 50s, Italians, they were not very well liked. They couldn't even work. It was at American Motors, whatever the name was of the plant before that. They would not hire Italians there. Every time that somebody talked about Italians, immediately they were saying, oh, the mafia, you know. So we had to overcome that. And actually, even if it's true, I'm proud to where we came from, what we did, and to the point where we're at now. So we should honor that.
Thank you very much, County Board Supervisor Gabe Nudo. For an academic perspective on these matters, I'm turning to some of the faculty members at the University of Wisconsin Parkside to introduce those ideas and explain how and why these things matter and these viewpoints matter. I've asked the Dean of the College of Arts and Humanities, Leslie Hines Walker, to join me this morning. Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning. Well, as you know, as folks know who live in Kenosha, that the protests that are currently going on were more or likely sparked by the George Floyd death and the protesters who are asking very emphatically for social justice, right? So it's linked, the question of social justice is linked and has been linked not only to the history of chattel slavery in the United States, but it's also being linked to the history of the, we can call the colonizing of the United States by white Europeans that began, according to the myth, the story in 1492, right? I mean, that's when, Columbus sailed the ocean blue, as the saying went. So So for a long, obviously for a long time in American history, we have this mythologizing that has happened about our origin story of the United States. And part of that mythology is the quote unquote discovery of the country by these Europeans, you know, whether they were Portuguese or Spanish or in the beginning or English. And so, and then in this part of the country, in the United, in this part of the world, obviously there were a lot of French so-called, you know, explorers and folks coming here as well as missionaries. So you have this history of Europeans, so, you know, discovering the United States, and then written into our history books is this kind of heroic history of the United States, which is this conquering of the of these Americas by what's called a civilizing force, and we not only we are a civilizing force, but we are also a force that believes that we are a religious force. It's Christianity which comes to this continent, comes to the northern United States, and you know, we have conversions, forced conversions. We have the clearing of the indigenous people from lands, and all. But this traumatic and violent history on which the United States is formed is a history that is which happens all which is almost. Human in a way, which is to tell an origin story, and we and that's what this is. It's an origin story about the United States that puts this tremendously popular and favorable experience from the European perspective. So what we've had from the probably the late 19th century all the way through to very, very recently is the telling of the story of American history, which has this, which erases both the history of the indigenous people of America and the history of the chattel slavery in America as a kind of founding moment. And these right now, these two histories are being interrogated by a large group of Americans.
I'm now speaking with Professor Doug Singson. He's an assistant professor of art history at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. Good morning, Professor Singson.
Hi.
Now, with respect to the Columbus sculpture, I'd like you to come at it from the standpoint of what should happen with a monument, a sculpture like this. How would you differentiate the kinds of things that might be done, sir?
Yeah, well, I think as monuments come down, the most common response, which I agree with, is to relocate them to museums and provide them with additional historical context. And if, I mean, if the goal is really to remember history, I think a museum is the ideal place for it. That's really, that's what museums are for. And one of the great things about museums is that you can bring different objects together with text and contextual information and multimedia, video, all kinds of things, so that you have different sources of information and different artifacts that can play off of each other. Because history, I mean, if you really want to understand history, you can't look at just one source or one perspective. You have to put them all together. And museums are very good for doing that. Monuments are not good at doing that. I mean, monuments and I think that, you know, the a lot of people oppose taking down monuments because they think that if you do that, you're going to forget history or erase history. I think that, you know, monuments are fundamentally, they're not about remembering history. That's part of it, but the ultimate goal is to celebrate history, right? A monument celebrates the person or people that it's dedicated to. It holds them up as an example, literally holds them up usually because they're often placed on pedestals, right? And like when you place someone on a pedestal, you're saying that this is a good person and that we should emulate him, right? They're a model and they're literally, I mean, you know, they're usually placed in public parks and they're focal points for public spaces. Primary purpose of a monument is to celebrate someone. And if the person is, you know, is not really somebody that you actually want to emulate, then they belong in a museum where you can present the good and the bad side of them rather than a monument, which, you know, sets them out as someone to be celebrated. And I mean, I think that actually the reason that monuments are getting taken down is that people are remembering the whole story and not just a part of the story, right? So, I mean, Columbus is celebrated because he, quote, discovered the New World. Although, of course, there are already, you know, many different cultures living here. So he didn't really discover it. And even using that word discover is a kind of, you know, it dehumanizes the people who are already here. Because you can't discover, if he's the first one to discover it, that means that the millions of people who were already living here didn't know that it was here, or they don't count. And then there's also the fact that when Columbus arrived, I mean, it was a tremendous feat for Columbus to cross the ocean. That would took, you know, a lot of scientific and engineering knowledge and endurance. But once he got here, one of the first things that he started doing was sizing up the people he met to decide whether they'd be good slaves. And he writes about this in his journal. He says, you know, he says that the people he meets are very nice. They're very welcoming. And then he immediately says it would be very easy to capture them and enslave them. And they seem to be very obedient. So they would probably make good slaves. And he began enslaving them, and he kidnapped some of them and brought them back to Spain with him. And this began the process of attempting to enslave the native population, which ultimately resulted in, all of the Taino people on the first island where he landed died. They were completely wiped out. It was a genocide. And he began that. So I think that, you know, certainly we don't want to forget Columbus. That's a huge part of the history, but it's not all good. And if we really want to remember the whole history, then, you know, we have to decide if we want to be celebrating that. And I don't think we can. I think there's too much bad in there to put Columbus up on a pedestal. And I think, you know, there are other Italian Americans from Kenosha that can be celebrated instead. So, for instance, I mean, you know, I was just looking, there was an important strike at the auto plant here in 1933 that was an important part of winning things like a minimum wage and Social Security. And one of the leaders was a guy named Paul Russo, who I assume is Italian, although I don't know very much about him. But I mean, he strikes me as somebody who could be a great candidate for a monument.
So, you know, when we first put that monument up, the motivation of the Italian-American community, the way I interpret it, and I was a part of the people who donated, was to celebrate our ancestors. It wasn't really because we had a thing to celebrate Christopher Columbus.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, part of the history of monuments is who puts them up and why, right? So like a lot of the Confederate statues, for instance, that were put up in the 20s and 30s by supporters of the KKK to try to normalize what they were doing. I don't think that's where the Columbus statues are coming from. As you said, they were put up as symbols of Italian American pride. And I think it's worth remembering that when Italians first came to the United States in the late 1800s, early 1900s, they were looked down on as inferior to the white Anglo-Saxon Protestants who were running the country at the time. And so I think that the background for Columbus statues is Italian Americans saying that, hey, you know, our heritage is worth remembering too. And I think, you know, at the time it wasn't really realized that there were, you know, these terrible aspects of Columbus that made him not a good representative of, you know, why Italian Americans should be celebrated. But I think there's lots of other people who are. I mean, you could do Marconi, right? If you want to stick with people who are really like world famous. The guy who invented radio.
Now I'm talking with Alderperson Rocco Lamacchia, Sr. Alderperson Lamacchia, what's your take on the Columbus sculpture issue down at Harbor Park? What are your thoughts, and what are people telling you, sir?
Well, first of all, I believe that statue needs to stay there. It's Kenosha is, there's a lot of Italian people that came from Italy to Kenosha, including my mother and my grandparents. My dad was born in America. My mother was born in Italy. So I'm 100% Italian. I've heard nothing but good about keeping the statue there. There are a few people out there who think it should be taken down, but you have to understand, he's been gone for over 500 years. So to crucify somebody what they did back 500, 600, 700 years ago is unjust. And in my opinion, you can't change history. You have to learn from history. So I believe that statue needs to stay.
Do you recall, as I have my own memories of why the Italian-American community, of which I'm very much a part of, and I participated in that.
Yes.
Why did we do it? Was it about Christopher Columbus, or was it our focus something else?
I believe, you got to remember, I was a little younger. I believe it was about the heritage of our Italian ancestors and how they came to this country and how they settled in Kenosha, Wisconsin, that brought the statue to Kenosha. That's my opinion.
Well, I think there's a lot to that. And I noticed that, you know, in some communities, the ethnic heritage is celebrated in various ways.
Correct.
And we have a couple of brown signs on Green Bay Road saying it's the ethnic heritage trail, but that's about it. Now, I know the museum up in Racine does some, the history museum there does some things with their culture based on the immigrants. And maybe it's time for us to rethink how we treat our immigrant cultures, and I say plural, in Kenosha, of which we were among them. And I remember that when I wrote that check, I was concerned that I was among the last who remembered the ones who came over in the early 1900s,
yes,
which is when all my grandparents came here from hardscrabble lives in Calabria. And I think my sensibility and that of a lot of my compatriots was that we were on the verge of that memory and history being lost because it wasn't celebrated anywhere else. And the same goes for the Germans, the Irish, the Danish.
Yes,
it's a long list.
The worst, you know, as far as, like you said, the Danish, the Germans, the Italians. You know, this is a well-diverse society and area. I agree, totally agree.
There's nothing wrong with celebrating Charles Nash and Zalman Simmons, but they wouldn't have made their money without these immigrants.
Without the immigrants working. My grandparents worked at Simmons Factory. How many years ago was that? You know, my mother-in-law worked at, and father-in-law worked at AMC. So, you know, it wasn't for the hardworking immigrants, we wouldn't be where we're at today.
And now I'm talking with Associate Professor of History at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, Ed Schmidt. Good morning, Professor Schmidt.
Good morning, Lynn. Good to be with you.
Now, I'd like you to come at this question of the Columbus sculpture on a pedestal on a fountain in Harbor Park from your perspectives as a historian. Why are sculptures, why are monuments like this important?
That's such an important question always for historians, but as we've seen, it really has become an important question for just ordinary citizens in the community over the last couple of months by seeing how much conflict there's been over statues, seeing statues obviously removed as a result of very strong feelings about, you know, current developments in the country. And statues have served multiple roles throughout our history as a nation and really world history. They're erected oftentimes to hold up an individual who is seen as worthy of being celebrated, that they seem to embody the kind of virtues or values that a community or a nation really treasures and wants to aspire to. So it can be kind of almost religious in serving almost like an idol that people will kind of strive towards. It also, they serve a role of educating the community or a nation or a state about things that happened a long time ago, and the statues may look like they came out of a different world, dressed differently because they come from a different era. And so sometimes the images themselves are instructive. Oftentimes it's, you know, the plaque or any accompanying kind of description of the statue that really is meant to teach people who might just be wandering by a public square or, you know, engaged in recreation, just a way of sort of tapping someone on the shoulder or a family on the shoulder to say, this is where our community came. So they serve the role of kind of a very limited and thumbnail kind of education, and they have served a role of kind of an aspirational role, really, for a community or a society.
Now, most of us don't aspire to be genocidal maniacs, and there are some indications that wittingly or unwittingly, and probably wittingly, Columbus certainly was a bad guy. So what do we do?
It's a great question, a vibrant question, an important question, and one that's also not new. Really, the first time that this became a really electric kind of a question was on the 500th anniversary of Columbus' arrival in the New World, as the Europeans saw it. In 1992, there was a tremendous debate and controversy over that, and historians weighed in. People across disciplines academically weighed in terms of the impact of the arrival of Europeans and the way that it had a very detrimental impact on Native Americans, biologically, obviously, but certainly culturally, politically, ultimately losing control over land that had been theirs, right? So the question is couldn't really be more charged. And the thing I think that's really important to think about is, you know, why a statue or a memorial was created in the first place, and to see if that reason still resonates with the community. I think that's really the key, right? One of the things I'm sure you and a lot of your listeners are familiar with is the fact that Columbus and a lot of the memorialization of Columbus really doesn't kind of come along as we know it until the 20th century, when it means a tremendous amount to recent Italian immigrants to the United States. He's held up as a heroic figure who goes all the way back through American history, is celebrated for, again, sort of those virtues that people want to aspire towards, courage in terms of undertaking this voyage to God knows where, and kind of the idea of explorers have always been celebrated in American culture. So all kinds of reasons why Columbus was kind of held up for Italian Americans, especially, who, you know, are seeking acceptance in the United States as new immigrants. And so as that process of acculturation, they saw something they could latch onto that Americans who were here already, whether they be of English or Western European descent, already had some, you know, good feeling toward Columbus. They wanted to build that up even more. And so that was really important for them and still is, right? That's again, kind of the genesis of the statue that we have in the community. But the controversy starts to really emerge after historians, write more and other academics write more about the detrimental impact of the arrival of Europeans, and then really after the civil rights movement, when people of color across the board in the United States start to work toward full citizenship and empowering themselves to say, listen, a lot of the history that we celebrate has really been used against us to keep us marginalized. And so that's why we don't, certainly for Native Americans, it's self-evident why celebrating the arrival of Columbus, could be seen as the last thing that they want to celebrate in terms of what happens historically for them and for their culture over time. But it's even broader than that, right? It's about people who've been excluded, challenging a lot of the values that are celebrated in our society become problematic over time.
And now we'll turn to another professor, Dana Oswald, associate professor of English at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. Good morning, Professor Oswald.
Good morning.
Now, I wonder if you could tell us what your angle of expertise contributes to this discussion about the Columbus sculpture downtown.
I am a professor of medieval literature, and so in some ways I assume my field sounds very far away from this subject matter. I study very early British literature and very early British history. But I think the piece that I want to emphasize here today is my understanding of the long history of cultures and the way in which we communicate those histories. As a person who has studied originary figures like King Arthur and the way the metaphor of King Arthur has come to stand in for a set of values and beliefs that are, in fact, in many ways divorced from that figure himself, I think that that same kind of thing happens with a figure like Columbus, who comes to stand for a set of ideas that may or may not have anything to do with who he was or what he did. I think in the time when these immigrant communities were coming to America, when Italians were coming to America at that time, there was a great deal of racism and terrible treatment of members of those communities. And so they were looking for ways to authorize themselves and connect themselves to sort of the origins of the United States, find a place for themselves, make a place for themselves. And so I think they looked to this originary figure, Christopher Columbus, another Italian who came here, created a new life, built this new space for all immigrants to live together, right? There's this beautiful idea of that connection to be had. I think where it falls apart, though, is that those communities over time became, in fact, big parts of their the community at large. And that need for authorization through an originary figure like Columbus was no longer so necessary. And I think we also have, over the years, come to understand more about the complexity of Columbus as a historical figure and the problems of that figure. So I don't think, even though that connection, that emotional connection may still be there for the people who remember their grandparents, right, or their family members suffering under these sort of racist ideas, there's a new set of immigrant problems to be addressed right now. And part of what we've lost here is the discussion of the Native communities. And that is a big part of what we need to think about now.
Now, I wonder if you would go into that a little bit more in terms of bringing the Native American communities into this discussion.
How should that occur? Well, I actually spent the last day trying to find local scholars whose voices I think we need to amplify in this discussion. I am a white scholar. I am not Native. I am a specialist in literature of the European, you know, variety. And so I can only speak from this long view of history. So I think it is very important to reach out to people who are specialists in this area and also to tribal elders themselves, right? How do people in those communities feel about statues like this? Are there other things that they wish that we would focus on instead? Or is this a problem that is telling people that the conquering of Native American communities was a good and valuable thing for the creation of the United States? In thinking about how we should address this in schools, I have two feelings about this. Schools are being asked to do an awful lot of work. And so you have to begin from the ground up. What are the stories that we tell in schools and what things do students remember? They may be being taught some of these things and they simply don't register because there is such a great volume that's covered, right, in a high school history class, for example. But I think there are also textbooks that whitewash, that keep pieces of inconvenient history out, or teachers who don't feel compelled to talk about those moments because they want to sort of highlight achievement and these ideas of enlightenment and progress, how we've come so far. So I think we need to get rid of those ideas in some ways if we want to think about what our history can truly teach us and not just the idealization of that historical moment. And so you have this community trying to find a way to, I like to use the word sort of authorize itself, to sort of claim a kind of important status. I think that this is part of the difficulty of the statue, the specific statue, and I think many in different communities like Kenosha, where you have a community of immigrants who come and who are excluded from a lot of the organizations within the community at large and are seen differently, treated less equally, treated badly, as we see in a lot of immigrant communities over time. So one of the things that I think that community seeks to do is find a kind of, what I like to say, is authorization for themselves. They're connecting themselves to a figure that can give them power or can give them some sort of originary status. So by linking with Columbus, they say, here is Columbus, this Italian figure. We are just like Columbus and we're coming to this new world. There is a space for us here. And we are a part of all of you who have all been immigrants over the years. So I think that I can understand that maneuver and the reasons why it was necessary at that time. I think we have a much clearer notion of who Columbus as a figure is now in a more holistic way. And for the Italian community, I think that's a less necessary move now to sort of validate the Italian community's presence in the United States, which is different for other immigrants now.
Listeners, there you have it. The Columbus sculpture issue from several viewpoints. Thank you to each of my guests, to Whitney Cabal from Kenosha Activism, to the University of Wisconsin Parkside faculty who have lent their expertise, Dean Leslie Hines-Walker, Doug Singson, Ed Schmidt, and Dana Oswald, and to Kenosha elected civic officials Gabe Noodle and Rocco Lamacchia Sr. Dean Leslie Hines-Walker concluded my interview with her by urging that this conversation continue in a thoughtful, peaceful, and trusting manner.
So this question of what is to be done, I think is actually a fabulous question. And I'm not going to answer it because I think that what needs to happen is a very dynamic and robust conversation within communities to talk about what this means and or how we can correct and educate people about the erasure of the histories that, like I said, that are either histories around chattel slavery, the Civil War, and some of those really false narratives that have come to take roots in certain parts of the country. And likewise, Columbus's history being celebrated with impunity when we don't think about how this country was conquered and colonized. And if that part of the story isn't somehow included or somehow discussed in communities, I think we really are, and this is a French expression, we remain in a kind of bad faith, right? We need to understand our history, and we really need to, and we can't let it be glossed over because we're uncomfortable. It's time, and I think that this is what's great about the George Floyd moment, is that I think it's time for a kind of reckoning with this past that is in some ways unconscionable in all ways we've inherited, right? Because we aren't ourselves the actors of those deeds, but we have benefited, our world is structured, and we think about this country because of those deeds. So I think that what we need are robust and honest conversations in communities about how do we commemorate and celebrate those people that have been erased from our histories? How do we recognize that that violence happened? And at the same time, not, you know, the good intentions of this sculptor in Kenosha, Wisconsin, is to celebrate an immigrant history that so many of us share, and there is no reason that we can't be proud of that history too.
Perhaps one or more of our local civic organizations or the city government should form an advisory committee this fall to conduct vigorous community conversations and establish an action plan. Inclusion of indigenous peoples and enrolled tribal members from this region is necessary. I'd suggest inviting them to be involved in co-leading this conversation. Other countries have made progress with truth and reconciliation commissions to lift themselves from nasty histories too long covered up and mythologized into false narratives. It's time to move forward with social justice. For Community Matters, this is Len Iaquinta, urging you to get informed and get involved. Good day.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Support comes from Sweet Impact Chocolates, a local crafter of premium chocolates, now offering a subscription box. Every month, receive a box of chocolates left at your door. You'll never miss a delicious treat. Design your own box. Call 262-237-1818. From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, the City of Kenosha, through the Wisconsin Women's Business Initiative Corporation, is launching the Small Business Assistance Forgivable Loan Program to assist micro and small businesses impacted by the COVID-19 crisis. Visit wwbic.com.